It's been a
mic
minute.
Mic check. 1, 2, 1, 2.
It has been a minute. How you been?
Not too bad, man. Just staying busy with work.
Always.
That's about it and everything else.
Trying to get the Haunted Halloween show on the rails has been been interesting, to say the least. Nothing bad, but just we've got so much going on that we haven't had in prior years. To try to coordinate,
yeah.
And you know, just
everything's a lot more detailed now.
Putting people onto calendars and that kind of stuff that we just in the past we were like, hey, it's on this date, show up and right. Do your thing. Now we're like trying to a whole lot more moving parts.
Yes,
and it's going to be great. That's the thing about it is all of these things that we're bringing are really really cool things.
Yeah, it's a lot more exciting.
So. Sure. I think we'll do a show dedicated to that one here a little bit closer to the time so that we can explain and kind of give a shout out to everybody that's coming out. But Scary Dad's Haunted Halloween Show, we got a new website. It is scarydadcon.com. So no more Nightmare Retreat. That one's been shelved for the moment. And okay. Scarydadcon.com has all of the kind of news and updates that we got going on. So go to that website and see all the stuff. I'm updating it daily. So if you look at it today and you're like, well, that's what it looked like yesterday. Well, look around because there's probably something new. Anyway, episode 141 of the Scary Dad podcast. It is the 29th of June. July.
Yes. We're in the heat of summer right now.
Yeah, right in the middle. Right, dude, deep in it. And this one's going to be a dual episode. We're saying a final farewell to one horror icon and a semi-farewell to
second,
another one.
Yes.
So in the first part, we're going to talk about we just lost Mr. Rutger Hauer.
Yes.
Great actor, all-around good guy. And we're also, Alan Moore announced his retirement.
Retirement from comics. He's about to end it all right now. The amount of influence he's had on the comic book world is significant.
Astounding. Just looking over it, just kind of briefly glancing at the page in prep for the show, I was like, holy wow.
When we say groundbreaking, he's definitely one that fits that bill.
Big time. So let's get into the show.
First, the old business.
Okay. On this date in AD 238, This I just put on here because it sounds badass. It like sounds like a scene from Star Wars. On this date in 238, the Praetorian Guard storm the palace and capture Pupinus and Balbinus, two co-emperors of Rome. They are dragged through the streets and executed, and then Gordian the Third becomes the emperor at only 13 years old. So pretty sweet.
Yeah.
It's pretty adventurous there. On this date in 1775 is the founding of the U.S. Army. George Washington put a man in charge and said, get those boys together. On this date in 1921, Adolf Hitler becomes the leader of the Nazi Party. So still got a few minutes before he's going to start really wrecking shop,
right.
But it's on its way.
Yeah.
On this date in 1958, Eisenhower signs the National Aeronautic and Space Act, which essentially forms NASA. Big deal if you're in the Houston area.
Oh, yeah. Especially where we're at right now.
What's your thoughts on the whole Space Force idea?
I think there's other things that the money should be allocated for. In particular, with space research, there's other things that I think would take priority as opposed to having a militarized space force.
See, you know how like I'm real like political atheist, and so often there will be some issue, and then they'll do something, and I'm like, okay, this is called smoke and mirrors, right? Like, but historically, and this goes all the way back to Rome, and like anytime there's a crisis, the way that a monarch or a president or whatever would kind of, you know, offset the crisis would be to kind of throw the public a bone.
Yeah.
And be like, okay, we're going to have a festival, or we're going to have a, you know, something. So Space Force to me seemed like something that was just like, oh, hey, here's something neat and cool that y'all can pay attention to instead of being mad at me all the time.
Wagging the dog.
But then I was listening to the Joe Rogan podcast, and he had Neil deGrasse Tyson. So neither one of those guys are friendly to Trump at all. Mm-hmm. And Tyson was saying, like, he was asking about it, and he was like, well, here's the thing, is you have advancing technology, you have spy satellites and stuff, and he's like, and just look at what technology can do with, you know, surveillance and listening and little bugs and Amazon and all that stuff. And he's like, and all of the core of most of that stuff is in space.
Yeah.
He's like, so whenever it comes down to it, he goes, we're not talking about, you know, weaponized space shuttles. The Space Force is essentially going to be weaponized satellites that can destroy other satellites. Yeah. It's a robot war.
Yeah.
And he's like, and at its core, it's needed. And
basically, drones in space.
With advancing technologies, like, for example, the Air Force used to be a part of the Army. They didn't have planes, and then they did have planes, and then they incorporated them into the military. But with the advance of the technology, they realized that
they couldn't be its own entity.
It needed to be an Air Force. It needed to have its own sort of training. Mm-hmm. and you know, so like your run-of-the-mill soldier can't fly a plane.
Yeah.
And your run-of-the-mill pilot is not necessarily a grunt, but you separate them out. He's like, so what it is essentially just an extension of NASA that's part of national security, and it's got a cool name. And yeah. He's like, but ultimately they just need the funding to split off from one to another. So I was a little bit less cynical about it after that.
Yeah, like, makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And I think he's a consultant on the project.
Okay.
Tyson, anyway. So anyway, and on this date in 1976, the first Son of Sam murder, David Berkowitz in New York.
Okay.
Crazy son of a bitch.
That was a crazy time. I was watching the Zodiac last night, the one with Robert Downey Jr. in it. Mm-hmm. And, just the whole time period of the 70s with, you know, serial killers and stuff, it's crazy how it kind of took off. It became trendy.
Yeah, it did. There's a lot of them then. I'm just thinking like Richard Ramirez.
Yeah, Richard Ramirez, Zodiac Killer, Son of Sam. Just during that period, it was just like I said, it was you never hear of more than one at a time.
Yeah.
And during that decade, there were several.
Yes. We need to do one of those. We need to revisit that subject again.
Right. Yeah. Because so. it's fascinating to me how, you know, what changed. What has changed? Because, you know, there's crazy people today just like they were at that time. But for some reason, it became the hot thing to do.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. Notable births. 1933. Lou Albano.
Captain Lou.
Oh, yeah, dude. Just remember him with all the rubber bands.
All the rubber bands on his face. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. 1938. Peter Jennings. He's not a person that you would ever really, you know, it's like, he was just always there.
Right.
He was, you know, like the nightly news guy. But then whenever he was gone, it was like, wow. He was just kind of always there.
Yeah.
You know. 1972, Will Wheaton. Lots of stuff, Star Trek, but
yeah.
Most notably for us would probably be Stand By Me.
Mm-hmm.
Stephen King adaptation. 1972, Stephen Dorff.
I used to like him as an actor. Yeah.
What do you think about them retooling Blade?
The casting, I think, could use some work. To me, the lead they cast doesn't fit the, you know, the what I imagine Blade to be. But it may be because Wesley Snipes has been playing him for so long.
And did it so well.
You'd expect someone with the same build and everything else and just emotions and stuff. So I'm willing to give it a chance. Just like, you know, Robert Pattinson isn't exactly my ideal Batman because I don't picture him being Batman at all with his build and just everything. But you got to give stuff a chance.
So. Well, yeah, and whenever, like, especially with the Batman conversation, people were like, oh, not my Batman, hashtag. And I'm like, okay, look, people did not bitch about Clooney because Clooney looks like Bruce Wayne. You would think, you know, he's older, but he looks like Bruce Wayne anyway. And, you know, he'd be a formidable Batman. He was a horrible Batman. People bitched about Heath Ledger, and that's one of the best performances of a Joker ever. People bitched about Ben Affleck, and he turned in a pretty good performance. You know, so everybody likes to bitch all the time. It's kind of strange because the dude who's playing Blade, I've seen him in some stuff, but he's very soft spoken.
Yeah, that's just it. He doesn't. To me, it just doesn't.
But he does kind of come off a little. He does have the creep factor because he is so. I guess he's got a real intense.
Well, he was Cottonmouth in the Luke Cage series, and so he was a bad guy in that. So he can definitely do the evil side, but it's just his stature is what I have an issue with.
Also, I don't know Wesley. Whenever you have a performance like Wesley Snipes in Blade, it's just. It's a hard act to follow.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that there's not a door open for somebody else, but that somebody else is going to be under the microscope.
Yeah.
Because when Wesley Snipes came out, you know, when he was Blade, nobody had really heard of Blade.
Right.
So he could do anything he wanted to as long as he, you know.
He set the standard.
He set the standard. But now everybody's going to be comparing Wesley
Just
Snipes.
Just like the same thing. Imagine whenever they decide to recast Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that standard has been set.
Oh, and by the way, everybody bitched about him being Wolverine.
too tall. Yeah.
And he was a really good one. So, all right, let's see. 1982. I wouldn't have put this down except for it was funny.
We like funny.
You know who Allison Mack is?
No.
She played Chloe on Smallville. So okay. She was like the newspaper editor at the high school paper, and she was Clark Kent's friend on Smallville. That's her only thing that she's ever done. But she was also the person who was busted for being the leader of that sex cult, like the sex slave cult.
Yeah, I remember hearing about
and,
that.
And with that other dude where they were tattooing their initials on these women's legs. It's like intense, like super evil shit. But... when I'm scrolling through looking for notable births, Allison Mack pops up as actress / criminal.
And I was like, famous criminals, of course.
That's awesome. So anyway, happy birthday in prison to Allison Mack. All right, and this date in 1890, we lost Mr. Vincent Van Gogh. Strange, because the actual pronunciation of his name is Gach. But everybody calls him Go. 1974, we lost Cass Elliot, Mama Cass from Mama and the Pops.
Yeah.
The only reason she's on the Scary Dad podcast is because she was a guest on Scooby-Doo.
Yes, she was. Yeah, I do remember that.
And we talked about Scooby-Doo having like weird guest stars because like I'm a kid and I have no idea who Phyllis Diller is.
She's always running around with
around with the mystery gang. Yeah, and Cass Elliot was. I'm like, I understood Batman. Like Batman made sense.
Yeah,
but
the Harlem Globetrotters. Don't forget that he used to pop in all the time.
All right, and if you're not from Houston, this one won't matter. But on this date, we lost Mr. Marvin Zindler. Eyewitness News.
he was awesome. he was a flamboyant character that left an impression for damn sure.
He made his name by busting the chicken ranch out in LaGrange.
Yes, yeah.
Which
inspired the Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, and also the wonderful hit LaGrange by ZZ Top, where they're talking about going down to the chicken ranch and getting some hoes. Anyway, that is it for old business. We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with the new.
Nick Parker is quick as a snake, strong as a bull, not to mention blind as a bat.
Nice doggy.
What's your problem? You blind?
Yeah.
Holy
shit. He came for a friendly visit.
Step aside, blind man.
But his timing was a little off. Now, a young boy wants his guidance.
Did you ever cry?
The strong man is never afraid to cry.
They've got him, don't they?
Where's my son?
He's here. He's fine.
And the boy's father needs his help.
Now, if you want to keep him that way...
Unreasonable men make life so difficult.
Shoot!
The blind Zorro!
If you can't handle it, get me somebody that can. Get me Bruce Lee!
Bruce Lee is dead.
Then get his brother!
Rutger Hauer.
I also do... circumcision.
Blind Fury.
All righty, Mr. Gomez, please.
New business is new business, and this is new business.
There's a petition out right now. It is currently sitting, I checked it this morning to see, it's currently sitting at 90,000 signatures. So on change.org, once they reach 150,000 signatures, they will be sending this petition to the office of the President of the United States to move Halloween to the last Saturday of the month.
See, they can't. I mean, not saying that they can't do it, but it's a religious thing.
Yeah,
Halloween is All Hallows Eve,
right?
Which is the night before the All Saints Day.
Yeah, because you know, back home in Louisiana, that's that the day after Halloween, you brought flowers and plants to put on the graves of your loved ones. Mm-hmm. They still do it to this day. You know, all the grocery stores and stuff, they have huge sections of. Right at around Halloween, of the plants to bring and put on graves.
Right.
It's endeared as so many people are to Halloween, and it's just the tradition behind it being on the 31st every year. And then all this is people that want to have safer trick-or-treating for kids.
Well, and that's fine, but here's the fun part about that. You know how we're big into Halloween. But if Halloween falls on a Wednesday, I have a Halloween party on Saturday and Saturday. I celebrate Halloween all week long.
Yeah.
My kids, I mean, let's put it, you know, if Halloween lands on a weekday, my kids are done by 8 anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're little. They go out, they run around, they get tired, mm-hmm. and they're done.
What their thing is, what they're saying is that it's safer. To do it on the last Saturday of October, because according to their statistics, there are 3,800 Halloween-related injuries each year. 82% of parents don't use high visibility aids on their costumes. They don't use reflective tape, glow sticks, finger lights, or light-up accessories. 63% of children don't carry a flashlight. 65% of parents don't discuss Halloween safety with their kids. 70%. And I'm wondering, how do you know 65% of parents don't discuss Halloween safety with their kids? Where are you getting that statistic from?
But why is it? Why would it make it any different if it's on a Saturday? They're still not putting reflective tape on the costumes. So if that is the problem,
if anything, there should be less traffic on a Wednesday night.
Yeah,
because everybody has to work the next day. You're not driving around. Saturday night's when all the drunks are out.
Exactly. So it seems to me like they're trying to solve the problem with a completely different solution.
Right.
But yeah, like if you can't move All Saints Day. And all, you know, regardless of the fact that we love Halloween so much, you can move trick-or-treating to Saturday, I guess, if you want.
Mm-hmm.
But then neighborhoods could just do that themselves. If you're a helicopter parent and you're just really worried about your kids, go petition your HOA and be like, hey, can we do trick-or-treating on Saturday instead?
Right.
Well, you have to try to move a religious holiday.
right. Yeah, just locally do something about the night that you actually trick-or-treat. While we're on the subject of Halloween Horror Nights have started to announce their lineup for this year. And as you may or may not have heard, one of the things they're going to be implementing into their Halloween is a Stranger Things section. It's going to be taking place September 13th through the 3rd. There's going to be the Stranger Things maze. There's going to be a walkthrough attraction called Holidays in Hell, a nod back to the original Universal Monsters with a Frankenstein meets the Wolfman attraction. There's going to be a take on 1984's Ghostbusters, and they recently announced they will be having a an attraction based on the Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Sweet.
Which is pretty neat. The 1988 MGM cult classic, of course, Killer Clowns from Outer Space, will be making their debut at Halloween Horror Night. So the new maze will take guests back to the town of Crescent Cove, which has been taken over by a pack of murderous creatures dressed like clowns. So that I thought that was pretty neat.
That is super cool.
They are going to be doing a little thing on that. Let's see where else I wanted to go next. Okay, you may have heard with the recent San Diego Comic-Con, they've announced the rest of the MCU that's going to be coming out. And the this is going to be considered, because Blade technically wasn't in the MCU. That was a different thing. A movie entitled Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness will be the first horror movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Have you seen Spider-Man Far From Home?
No, not yet.
There's a sequence in the movie, and I won't spoil anything for you, but you know the enemy in Far From Home is Mysterio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he deals in illusions and stuff. And there's a scene, there's a really good sequence where he's got Spider-Man trapped in like an evolving hallucination. And it is a really, really cool scene. But you can also see where they're starting to try to go a little bit dark. I mean, as if Thanos killing half the universe wasn't dark.
Yeah, that was pretty dark.
But that was kind of more military and like, you know, it wasn't gory and it wasn't freaky. The scene in Spider-Man, there's one specific one where he like sees his own grave and he's got like worms and stuff crawling out of his skull and it's like, whoa. Like, I mean, it's just a little quick flash, and I probably didn't even remember it correctly because it's gotten so many things going on, but it is a frightening scene for a Spider-Man movie.
Right.
And I was like, ooh, like this is cool. Like, and then I read about that and I was like,
is it as frightening as Tobey Maguire doing his dance down the street in Spider-Man 3? That's just a joke.
Well, it didn't make me want to get up and leave. I wanted to stay and watch more, so it wasn't bad.
For those not totally familiar with Doctor Strange, the premise of the character is that he is a world-class surgeon whose abilities were taken away in a horrific accident. He searched the world over to find a way to heal himself, eventually found himself under the tutelage of the Ancient One, who trained him in the mystic arts, and now the Sorcerer Supreme, he must battle dark forces from our world and other realms. I never really got into the Doctor Strange comic book, but I do enjoy the movies.
Yeah, the movie is really good.
The casting is perfect. You know, Benjamin Cumberbatch is just, he's awesome. I love him as an actor, dude. Mm-hmm. Everything he does, I don't think he's done anything that I haven't enjoyed.
Yeah, he's
so,
he's amazingly good for that kind of role specifically.
Yeah.
Like, he was really good as Sherlock Holmes too, just kind of fast paced and smart. You know, he's really good.
Okay, we'll end it off. You know, I like to do something just silly and goofy. Have you seen the trailer for Cats?
Dude, I haven't had a chance to watch that. I've heard that it's bizarre.
It is being looked at as just an absolute terrifying adaptation of the Broadway musical that. They're saying that it actually looks like it would be the lead into a horror movie just with the CGI. They released their first trailer a couple of weeks ago, led to just crazy divisive reactions on social media. There's been issues with it as far as the CGI, it being too frightening, to whitewashing of characters. It's being accused of racism, just so many weird things, man. And you know, the thing about it is it's pretty high level celebrities that are in this movie, and it's just weird how
it could go so wrong.
You didn't hear anything about it. I didn't even know they were making a live adaptation of Cats. And as soon as they dropped the first trailer, just everything just backfired on them. It's just unreal. And I think, isn't Rebel Wilson, is that Bruce Willis?
Who?
Doesn't Bruce Willis have a daughter named Rebel? Rebel Wilson. Who is that?
No, she's the British comedian.
Okay, she's in it. Ian McKellen, Taylor Swift is in it. Idris Elba's in it. And it's just, if you haven't seen the trailer yet, go and check it out and let me know what you think. Because, like I said, it is just... the complaints go across the board with this trailer. Even one person was saying, you know, why are their tails coming out of their anus? Shouldn't it be above the anus? And I'm thinking, so you actually want to be able to see somebody walking with their tail up in the air, and you can see the little actual starfish there. Just like a real cat. You know, how realistic do you actually want this film?
That's awesome, dude.
So, yeah, you gotta... and it's weird, because like The cats look, you know, they have human qualities, but like the sets, all the furniture is oversized. So they're supposed to be small cats. It's just, it's the oddest looking thing
weird.
You have ever seen. So yeah, if you get a chance, go ahead and check it out. We'll end it there.
finishing new business. I recently was friended by a guy named Jake Slasha on Facebook. And he's got a show, and it's three guys. It's called the Slasher Podcast. And they're on, I don't even know, like maybe episode 10. And it's just a movie. It's a movie discussion show. But the first show of theirs I checked out was their newest one, and they're talking about Maximum Overdrive. And they're going...
The unofficial, most popular Stephen King movie ever made.
Strangely enough, yeah, because they're sitting there talking about it, and they're talking about it kind of like... It's like... Was there anything scary in this movie? And they're like, no. And like, all the stupidity, yeah. It's like, but it was so much fun. Like, you can't not watch it. I mean,
right. It's
and they're sitting there dogging on it and stuff. And I, like, that's the thing about podcasts is you kind of want to talk it. You know,
you
want to interject.
Talk yet. Yeah.
It was like, man, we did that double feature, Stephen King on location at the Alamo Draft House, and interviewed probably 30 people.
Yeah, unofficial poll.
And asked them, what's your favorite Stephen King movie? And almost everybody said Maximum Overdrive. And it wasn't, they weren't playing that movie that night. That was just what came to mind. So versus, you know, The Shining, Shawshank Redemption, Stand By Me, Creepshow.
Misery.
Like, all of these wonderful films, everybody's like, Stephen King, Maximum Overdrive.
It's so much fun, dude. And it's cheesy, the special effects are kind of crappy. We've talked about the one part where the lawnmower's coming after the kid. You can see the wheels of the lawnmower aren't even touching the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not rolling together. They're just kind of just going on their own. But it's still such a fun movie.
Oh, yeah. It's like, well, we're reaching there. It's like, you guys are right, but man, you have no idea, like, the impact of that movie on just the regular movie watcher. It's just
like, soundtracked by AC/DC, including a special appearance by them. The movie's got everything, man. The horror doesn't have to be scary; it just needs to be fun.
So, shout out to the Slasher Podcast. That was a good time. And with that, we're going to take a break, and we will be back.
Matter of time, I suppose.
Watchmen, one of us died tonight. Somebody knows why. Somebody knows.
I heard he'd been working for the government. Maybe it was a political killing.
Maybe someone's picking off costumed heroes.
John thinks that there's going to be a nuclear war.
What if that's why someone wants us out of the way? So we can't do anything to stop it. An attack on one is an attack on all of us.
Watchmen are over. What do you suggest we do about it?
Retribution.
We can save this world.
Why would I save the world? I no longer have any stake in.
Do it for me.
whisper. No.
Let's reveal some sad news.
Yes. Unfortunately, a couple of weeks ago, we found out that we lost one of my favorite actors, whether you call him a character actor or, I mean, he has leads in several movies. Also, is Rutger Hauer passed away, mm-hmm. which was shocking to me. He's one of those guys that he hasn't done a lot of big movies in a while. So, you know, I rewatch his movies all the time. My favorite, of course, like I mentioned to you, being Blind Fury. And that one has a certain connection from me back in the day, because I had a real good friend of mine, Charlie Williams, who lost his eyesight in an offshore accident. And he that was one of his favorite movies. He just loved the idea of Blind Fury. He just thought it was so cool. So I rewatch his movies a lot, but he's young in those movies. Mm-hmm. So I just never really pictured Rutger Hauer as aging, you know, and getting older. And he passed away at the age of 75 after a short illness, which was shocking. But of course, he's best known to people in the horror genre, probably for his role in Blade Runner, and of course the original Hitcher, which the Hitcher, like we mentioned in a couple of podcasts ago, one of Stephen King's, what he considers one of the scariest movies ever made.
The Hitcher is brutal.
Yes.
Like, and it pulls no punches. I mean, right. It's rough, and he is, the thing is, he looks nice.
Yeah.
That was the thing about Rutger Hauer is...
He's a very inviting person.
The reason he was such a good villain is because he's extremely good looking, and he's got those soft baby blue eyes, and he looks like a nice guy. Mm-hmm. So whenever he's evil, he goes from being inviting and nice to extremely cold like that.
Right.
And he's just got this kind of a menace to him. But then, you know, whenever the cameras are off and you see him, like, he's got all the different charities that he did, and he did a lot of humanitarian work, and he was a genuinely nice guy.
Right.
Excuse me.
Well, you know, I see him in The Hitcher, and then, you know, I see him in Blind Fury. Two totally different characters.
Yes. I mean,
the guy was a fabulous actor. For those that don't know Blind Fury, it's an awesome movie about a prisoner of war from Vietnam who lost his eyesight in an explosion. He was captured. He never made it back home after the war was over. He ended up going to live with a group of people, and he was taken under the wing of a martial arts master and taught to sword fight. And it's a funny ass movie. Tex Cobb is in it as one of the main villains. And Tex Cobb, for you guys that don't know the name, I'm sure you know the person. He has been a character actor in so many movies, from Beaumont, Texas.
He was the motorcycle guy on Raising Arizona.
Raising Arizona, yes.
So it's probably his most prominent role, yeah. Because he was just so severe.
Sinister,
so out there.
Yeah.
Throwing that grenade to blow up the bunny.
Some other horror movies that he was in. He was in a late adaptation of Salem's Lot in 2004.
Mm-hmm. He played Barlow.
He was
King Vampire.
He was in Sin City. He had a role in Batman Begins, which I don't...
Yeah, he was the remember whenever they fired Morgan Freeman, and Bruce was kind of, he was playing Playboy,
yes,
and they were trying to push Bruce out, and they fired Fox. Rutger Hauer was that like CFO that was orchestrating all of that.
Okay. He was in a movie called Dracula 3 Legacy. He was in one called Hobo with a Shotgun, which I think I might want to try to track that one down on Amazon to see if I can see it. And Dracula 3D.
Known probably best is for his role in Blade Runner.
Yes.
And I mean, he was a... in the end, he was a sympathetic character, but all through the movie, he was just crazy as hell. You know, he was scary.
Yeah.
And I remember that scene where Harrison Ford shoots Daryl Hannah, mm-hmm. and she's laying there screaming with a hole in her belly and like, and like that was a scary movie for a little kid.
And I remember seeing that at the movie theater back in the day. So I was a little kid when I went to see it. That's one of the first movies I actually remember seeing at the theater, was Blade Runner.
Wow.
I remember the ticket price was ridiculously cheap. Whenever people always say, what's the cheapest you ever paid for a movie? And I always remember $1.35. I remember going to see Blade Runner at S&E Theater for $1.35 back in the day.
So, pour one out. Rest in peace, Mr. Rutger Hauer. You will be missed.
Yes, and I will be watching Hobo with a Shotgun as soon as possible.
All right.
I already rewatched Blind Fury, so... secondly, we're not losing him, but the thing about it is, with Alan Moore, exceptional recluse. He does not do appearances. He does not do interviews. He's nowhere to be seen. So... with his retirement, saying he's not going to be working, we're pretty much never going to hear from Alan Moore again.
Right. Well, he was going to write novels and stuff. Yeah. I don't think he's going to work with comics anymore.
Okay.
I think he'll continue to write. But the thing about Alan Moore is if he says he's going to do something, he's probably not going to turn back on that. Because he's turned down literally probably tens of millions of dollars for... taking his name off of properties such as Watchmen and V for Vendetta for the filming of mm-hmm. it.
Well, you know, I found out, doing some research for this one on Alan Moore, you know, I just, there's some things that I didn't know that I wanted to go ahead and find out. He got screwed over a lot by DC Comics.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things they got screwed on were, involves the Watchmen. Something that most people consider his absolute greatest work, his most influential work towards the world of comics. People say that Watchmen made it cool. What Watchmen was able to do is people at one time grew out of comics. They read comics as a child, and as they got older, comics were still for children.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Moore started a trend where he made comics cool for adults too. So all these people who were huge comic book fans as children, they could continue being fans of comic books, you know, they could find stuff that was, you know, they could relate to better as adults. That's one of the things Alan Moore was able to do.
It brought superheroes into the real world.
Yeah.
And it was a realistic take on them because behind the mask, they're still people, or at least they have to pretend to be people.
Mm-hmm.
And up until that point, really the only superhero that had problems would have been Spider-Man.
Right.
Peter Parker. And he was intentionally written that way, and if you listen to Stan Lee talk, they didn't want to do that. They were like, no, the superheroes have to transcend all of that. You can't have a teenage kid with problems being a superhero.
Yeah.
And they put it out, and it was instantly successful, and they're like, okay, well, this formula works. That was really the only one mm-hmm. until Watchmen.
Yeah.
And then you had all these superheroes that have... like they're somewhat, what do you call it, a Justice League or whatever, and they don't get along, and
they've got real bad world
history
problems.
And they've got real world problems, and they have disagreements in tactic
mm-hmm.
and disagreements in politics and disagreements in so many things, just like a real group of people are, you know. You get friends together and they start, let's start a band. Well, immediately there's going to be arguments and fights,
right?
And you elevate them to almost godlike status, and you imagine those, what those fights would entail.
It with DC, I found the little thing I was looking for. Part of his disdain and antipathy towards DC Comics was DC was able to capture the legal rights to his to Watchmen and V for Vendetta. And whenever Alan Moore and his co-writers, they first came up with these books, they were promised that all rights would return to them when Watchmen went out of print. Okay, and it never did. And in 1986, one of the co-creators, a gentleman by the last name of Gibbons, was doing an interview with the one and only Neil Gaiman, where he said in 1986, what would be horrendous, and DC could legally do it, is if would be to have Rorschach crossing over with Batman or something like that. But I've got enough faith in them that I don't think they'd do that. And that's exactly what they did to keep the Watchmen series going and not out of print. And now we have the current Doomsday Clock that, mm-hmm. that they're printing. So they've brought
the Watchmen into
the DC universe.
Into the DC universe.
Right.
Making, so the big thing about DC was in 2011 they rebooted their entire everything, their entire lineup of superheroes. They rebooted it. Was called the New 52.
Right.
and they rebooted these characters that were they were much diminished from their prior selves. They weren't as strong, they weren't as fast, they weren't as super as their previous incarnations. And some of the storylines did well, and a lot of them didn't. And ultimately, DC in 2013 was in. Was it 2013? No, it was 2016. Rebooted them again to the Rebirth.
Yeah.
And the Rebirth started this whole idea that the New 52 had been created by Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah.
And like they're still playing out this slow rollout of this, how it all ties in. But in Batman Rebirth, the first thing he does is like he digs the comedian's little smiley face out of a niche in the Batcave. Mm-hmm. Like, how did that get there? And that starts the mystery. But yeah, if the Watchmen never caught a print, then or if they're somehow now they're the creators of the DC universe.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they're going to be tied in forever now.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing, you know, you mentioned Dr. Manhattan, which is one of my favorite Alan Moore characters from Watchmen. In my opinion, he was an underutilized character across the DC universe. I mean, you're talking about the most powerful being in the world. I mean, he's at Superman level, if not beyond.
No, he could demolecularize Superman if he wanted to. He's that much more powerful.
And to me, that we should have known. Dr. Manhattan should have had his own series. He should have been crossed over a long time ago.
Well, I think
there's so many things you could explain by using Dr. Manhattan, as far as, you know, other worlds.
But I think the thing was, because Watchmen was always held to such a high standard, they put it on a pedestal and it lived in its own universe and it didn't cross over. Like all of the supers in Watchmen are analogs to other characters.
Yeah.
So like the owl is Batman basically.
Yeah.
And so if you look at the old like Justice Society and their costumes, and the Martian Manhunter kind of looks like Dr. Manhattan, who goes to Mars, you know, like later on whenever he escapes. So it was a side story in a completely separate universe, and they're only just now bringing it. So I mean, the Watchmen came out in 85.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's 2019, so it's been a while.
It's been a while.
Like they could have done all kinds of stuff, and they didn't.
But it's exciting to see this HBO show coming, and to see where they're going to go for now. Because I took the kids to Half Price Books last weekend just to go do some digging and stuff. And there's an entire Watchmen section now with the HBO series coming out. There's all these they've reprinted the graphic novel with all the issues from the initial Watchmen series. So yeah, it's a whole new group is going to be introduced to. You know, what I consider one of my favorite comic book series ever. And, you know, Alan Moore was not just involved with Watchmen. He was involved with another favorite comic book series of mine is the Swamp Thing. He redesigned the origin story of Swamp Thing to allow it to live for a very, very long time.
Yeah, and one thing I didn't know was that Alan Moore was approached specifically by Lynn Wayne. Because Swamp Thing was kind of circling the drain.
Uh-huh.
It wasn't selling well. They needed a refresh, a reboot. And Alan Moore had done so many good things in other areas that Lin Wayne directly went to Alan Moore and was like, hey, tapped him to write Swamp Thing. And Swamp Thing, as soon as Alan Moore took it over, it became a critical and sales success.
Mm-hmm.
Swamp Thing comics started selling.
Yeah.
And it was almost about to be canceled. And so this is kind of neat, because after the success of the Swamp Thing, then DC started tapping British writers to take over and reboot series. So that's where they got Neil Gaiman for Sandman. And well, he also did Black Orchid, who was just like a no-name superhero. Like, she'd had like a short-lived series like back in the late 70s. He took and like revamped her and brought her into the now. And then Sandman, who else? Well, anyway, it became Vertigo Comics.
Yeah.
So Alan Moore's work on Swamp Thing directly impacted and brought us Vertigo, mm-hmm. which was the adult imprint.
The adult imprint, right, for DC.
So, with, you know, it's where you got Preacher from,
yeah.
which was Garth Ennis. So, which I think he's... Didn't he do The Boys?
I think so. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes, he did. Yes,
so
he did. I was talking to somebody about that while I was at Half Price Books.
And Ennis doesn't pull any punches either.
Like, oh no,
he's hardcore.
Oh yeah, yeah. He definitely goes along with that. And Alan Moore, some other things he did, of course. When you think of Anon, the group of hackers that you know cause disarray, the one thing you think of is the Guy Fox Mask, and that is directly from V for Vendetta,
right.
which is another one. You know, Alan Moore was an anarchist, you know, by political preference.
Mm-hmm.
V for Vendetta is an exact, you know, is his inspiration. That's where his inspiration came from for V for Vendetta, which was a huge movement that you know still influences people today.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh no! I was gonna just he also did, which is funny because Miracle Man wasn't as successful. Obviously, there's no movies made, but Miracle Man was an Alan Moore thing.
Mm-hmm.
Another revamp of essentially the Shazam.
Yeah, yeah.
Launched Captain Marvel. Well, Miracle Man, like in V for Vendetta, V is trying to take down a fascist government. In Miracle Man, Miracle Man is a fascist leader.
Yeah.
So I mean, like he kind of plays both sides of the spectrum. He doesn't. He just writes good story.
Yeah.
And whenever you read about, like, when he talks, like, he's like a wizard. he his religion is magic with a C, CK at the end. Like, he's...
You just mentioned something. You know, he writes so well. So well that artists are able to take his concepts and do such beautiful work with it. Because, you know, he doesn't draw anything. He just writes. He mm-hmm. sets the story and then works with a co-creator who's an artist. And they are able to take his words and just do such beautiful work with it.
Oh, yeah. The Watchmen and V for Vendetta, I remember because I was, you know, I was a superhero comic. So the Watchmen were superhero comics, and Watchmen blew me away. I was younger, I was in high school or whatever. Which, I mean, obviously, I'm in that phase between about to be out of comics and, mm-hmm. like, so Watchmen was I got the graphic novel. Like, that and Sandman were like, ooh, I can still enjoy this. And it's not right. just like cheesy superhero soap operas. It's real stuff, you know, touching real issues yeah. and real problems and stuff. It's good.
Another one that he's going to be known by the general populace very well for is League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which is mm-hmm. going to be the final issue of that comic book is what's going to be marking the end of his career in comics. But League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was another groundbreaking comic book series. I didn't particularly care for the movie very much myself, but that's one that, you know, a lot of people are familiar with, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, and one that comic book fans across the board will know of as far as his work goes is The Killing Joke.
Yes.
Batman's The Killing Joke, which was a huge, huge success.
That book was shocking.
Yeah.
When I remember, I've still got it, you know, when it first came out, because I loved Brian Bolland's work,
mm-hmm.
and I knew Alan Moore was a baller, and but that book was so tragic and so violent and so hard to take. I remember closing that book and just sitting there, just being like, "Oh man," because the Joker's origin story,
yeah,
which it's bizarre to me how then they like turned. Later on, they turned Jason Todd, who was the Robin the Joker killed, into the Red Hood. Like, what? No, the Joker was the Red Hood before he got dropped into the vat, and it was an accident. And he was, you know, that's the whole thing with the Joker, where he's uh-huh. just one bad day.
Yeah.
Just one bad day, and you're on this side of the line.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so... that's where I'm at with Alan Moore, as far as just his influence on pop culture. We've mentioned before he was quoted by Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez
mm-hmm.
Recently in a tweet that she sent out to her critics, you know, Alan Moore has influenced pop culture, movies, comics, and books for a long time.
Well, and there's two that are not well known, but they're both really good. He did two Superman stories.
Yes.
One of them is called For the Man Who Has Everything.
Yeah.
That I've got that story. That's where he's imagines, like, he's under the that plant, that heart plant,
uh-huh,
that gives you your heart's desire. So he's, you know, he's grown up on Krypton and has a wife and son, and it all starts falling apart around him because Batman and Wonder Woman are fighting Mongol on the outside in the Fortress of Solitude, and it's like rocking and everything. So in his mind, like, Krypton starts falling apart. Uh-huh. But in these short little panels, this character that's been around forever, you know, Superman, he's made it to heaven, basically. He's got his heart's desire, and it is not to be a superhero. He wants to be a normal guy with a family, and he loses his wife, he loses his son, you know, and his daughter, and it all comes crumbling down around him, and he wakes up in battle, basically. Uh-huh. And it's just, you know, Superman is such a hard character to write for so many people. They can't get it right because, first of all, he's a god.
Yeah.
You know, he had a good upbringing. He doesn't really have too many, he doesn't have any skeletons in his closet. He's not like Brightburn. You know, Brightburn explains what would happen if he went the other way.
Uh-huh.
But Superman's tough because he's invulnerable. But Alan Moore found that
a way in to find a weakness.
To make you really feel for the guy.
Uh-huh.
Like, to make you really feel for him that he's not exactly a god. He does have thoughts and feelings, and he's a person. And then the other one was Whatever Happened to
The Man of Tomorrow,
which I've got that story arc too. It's a two-part series, and it ended the Superman story right before Crisis on Infinite Earths. So it was it was the final Superman story up until that point, which Crisis then spun the DC universe, and that was like in 86 or 87, and it's still, they're still doing Crisis bleed overs from that series.
Mm-hmm.
But in that one, everybody dies. Like, all of the heroes and all of the people, like everybody except for him and Lois, die. Body count, like, it's violent as hell. And again, Alan Moore, like, how do you make a Superman story interesting? Kill everything around him.
Yeah, don't make it predictable.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. So yeah, I mean, even his little one shots and side work, you know, his one Superman story that's, I read 20 years ago, it's like heartbreaking. Uh-huh. Just to think about it, I'm like, man, that was a good story, you know. And I've read hundreds of Superman stories, but that one sticks.
Right.
That's the power of Alan Moore.
So to the career of Alan Moore,
well, I think it's gonna be time for a retrospective of kind of, we do fresh eyes. I might go back and reread a lot of these old stories.
Yeah.
And, you know,
just come back with them,
you know, because they're not gonna be any more. But yeah, let's have a toast to Mr. Alan Moore.
Yep.
And we'll call that a show.
All right.
Hit us up on the Facebook. Hit us up on the website, scarydad.com. Throw us a review. Like and share. Tell your friends about the show. We're at episode 141. We don't have any signs of stopping. We got some scheduling conflicts, but we're working through
them. Yeah, we're working through them.
So we've also had a lot of folks that have stepped up and wanted to be part of the show because of our scheduling issues. So we'll get some fresh faces in here from time to time to kind of keep things fresh and new. And we'll see you next time. Keep it scary.
Later.
I've seen things you people wouldn't believe. Attack ships on fire off the shoulder of Orion. I watched sea beams glitter in the dark near the Tannhauser Gate. all those moments will be lost in time. Like tears in rain. Time to die.